I'm Chad Hughes, and you're listening to Elevated Access, the inside story. This episode, I met with Dan Toker, Vice President of Stakeholder Relations at Greengate Power. Dan shares what his path to VP looked like and factors he attributes to his success as an access professional. He breaks down his approach to gaining access for the largest solar development project in Canada, what made it successful, and just how large the project really is. He shares some of the drivers behind the renewable energy market in Alberta and his positive outlook for energy development in the province. You won't want to miss this one. So let's tune in now to the conversation with Dan. Dan, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Chad. Great to be here.
Yeah. Now, you and I, our intent here today is to really lean into the Traverse Solar Project, which I understand is going to be the largest solar project ever developed in Canada. And I know our listeners are going to be very interested to hear about how you were able to secure the access needed for that project. But I think before we go there, it's really important for our audience to understand who Dan is and understand your background and how you got to the place you are today. So why don't we start there and tell us about your background.
Sure. Thanks, Chad. I'm a native of Guelph, Ontario. Born and raised there, went to high school, university, graduated with a degree in sociology, and I had a great career in sales prior to moving to Alberta in 2005. When we got out here, funny story, I had no real plan. And my neighbor, in chatting with my new neighbor and new friends, somebody had mentioned to me that, you should be a landman. And of course I said, what's a landman? And they explained this to me. So I looked into that a little bit, and sure enough, there were some opportunities. And I really began my career in land negotiations and understanding land access with Scott Land and Lease, where I worked for a few years. I started out as a mineral landman and eventually ended up, working as a project manager on land acquisitions. And one of our clients was a new client, Greengate Power. So Dan Balaban and Jordan Balaban, who at that time was just fresh out of university, Queen's University, and their late father, Jack Balaban, came into Scott Land and Lease and hired Scott to do their land acquisition for about, 250,000 acres of wind power projects in Alberta. So I led that for Scott Land and Lease. And then ultimately, Greengate made me an offer to come over and work with them directly full time, it's quite common in the land brokerage industry for that to happen. And I gladly accepted that. And the rest is history. Since that time, we've, developed, three or four, of the largest wind power projects in Canada, and a number of solar projects are currently under development, and including the Traverse Solar 465 megawatt solar project, as you said from the beginning, is by far the largest solar project in Canada, but among the largest solar projects in North America, which we're very proud of. So I gladly accepted the role of Vice President of Stakeholder Relations with Greengate. Been here since 2008, and we've done some amazing things.
Yeah, I would say so. Going back to your time at Scott Land, first I've got to say it's funny how many of us that are in this line of work were introduced in a similar way to you were introduced to it, that that flippant comment from a neighbor or friend that says, hey, have you ever thought of being a landman? I'm curious to know, when you started out with Scott Land, what did you find initially that you liked about the work?
Well, great question. I just think, you know, calling random people and opening up a discussion about their mineral rights and discussing the terms and conditions and the negotiating really with them and you know, just that interaction, I thought was very interesting to me, and I really grabbed onto it and really did well early on in that role with Scott Land. So that sort of was the foundation for my growth as really a land negotiator and access expert since that time.
And I find often times when I'm talking with people like you, there will be some sort of pattern or philosophies that that were gained along the way, success patterns, I guess, if you will. What emerged for you? When did you start to realize that there was an approach that worked really well, or even just develop some deeper philosophies around how you're going to approach this kind of work?
Yeah, it's really tricky, and it's very organic in nature. And, you know, everybody is different, and, you know, everybody has their strengths and weaknesses. And I developed a set of skills, a unique set of skills in dealing with people early on in life. And those were just sort of refined as I got into this industry. So, you know, the approach of, you know, extreme patience and extreme respect, as I'm approaching, you know, people about, you know, oftentimes this is the first time they've ever even heard of renewable energy. So there's a lot of education that has to happen up front. And I think just having developed patience and respect for whom I'm speaking with was critical to my, you know, foundational approach to whether it's leasing minerals or approaching a landowner or landowners about putting, you know, a 400-foot structure in their backyard. You know, it's the same sort of thing. I think these are skills that are unique. Not everybody has them. People like me and you and people that do our types of jobs are very, who do it successfully, understand that every individual out there is different and every approach has to be different. So how you approach them initially, like first impressions, not only tells them something, but also tells you something about them. So you know how to gauge and plan your approach uniquely to that individual.
Yeah, I think there's a importance in being intuitive, being able to read the situation you're in, the type of personality that you're meeting for the first time. And that's can be very much intuition based. Tell us about Greengate. What a great company. I've followed the company for a long time. You know, I think most of our listeners will have heard about Greengate. Tell us what we need to know about this company.
Yeah. Well, first of all, Greengate's leadership is, you know, really the foundation of our success. Dan Balaban, our CEO, and Jordan, his brother. Jordan, incidentally, was just named top 40 under 40 by Avenue Magazine. Very, very proud of. He's the third Greengate employee to do so. His brother Dan was also. And then Michael Libin years ago was also, he's our CFO, previous CFO, was also named top 40 under 40. So, you know, we got a good cast of characters here, highly competent, you know, well-versed in the market, you know, again, great leadership. And Greengate was started 2007 by Dan Jordy and their father, Jack. And, you know, just sort of, this is an idea that Dan's always had. Dan always had an interest in renewable energy his whole life. He told me about a project he did when he was very little on renewable energy for some grade school project he did. So this is something very near and dear to him and his family. They're big thinkers, big projects. We don't do anything small. We move at supersonic pace, which is you know, the benefit of having a small company and few people, we're able to make decisions and move forward. Sometimes those decisions, you know, we have to backtrack a little bit because we've moved too fast, and that's the nature of our business also. And but Greengate has been, you know, we're locally owned and operated. You know, we've done some amazing things in the industry. We've developed the Black Spring Ridge 300 megawatt wind project, which at the time is the largest wind project in Canada. The Halkirk 150 megawatt project we developed, and we ended up divesting that to Capital Power. You know, now we have the Traverse Solar Project, amongst other solar project developments that we have in our portfolio. So we're a company that is you know, highly skilled. We are a nimble, great thinking group of individuals. And, you know, we just have unlimited views on where we want to go and what we want to do. And usually, you know, we're sitting around talking about ideas, you know, next thing you know, that idea has becomes action. Next thing you know, we're developing the largest solar project in Canada. You know, it's just one of, that's just sort of how we operate. Very, very impressive group of people that work for Greengate.
You know, it makes sense. What you've described, I think, gives everybody a glimpse of the culture. And it makes sense to me now, looking at what Greengate has accomplished and just kind of the, I would say the, again, the intuition of the people that I've met, yourself included. That's cool. Okay, so 1.3 million solar panels. I learned this, I saw Dan on BNN a while back talking about this project. This is the Traverse Solar Project that we're going to talk about. So frame it up for our listeners. What is this project? What makes it the largest in Canada? I understand one of the largest in the world. So tell us what makes it so.
Well, this just goes back to what I just said previously about us having this idea about, you know, building this, you know, mega project. And, you know, we picked an area where we knew there was relatively low population density, you know, average to low cultivated farmland, in an area where there was transmission capacity. And, you know, it was just 5 years ago that we started meeting with landowners. And here we are today. Incidentally, we just went out there last week, Dan, Jordy and I. CBC was doing an interview with Dan and some of the employees on the project, and they're in full scale production. And the project is well underway. It was an impressive, so impressive, almost overwhelming sight to be there to see this, but to realize that this just started 5 years ago was incredible. So, you know, we started once we identified the area we wanted to be in, I started calling landowners. And, you know, normally I don't really like to meet with groups of landowners. That can be sort of, they gang up and it can go sideways real quick, and then it gains momentum and it just doesn't work. So normally I meet with landowners individually for these types of things. However, this time we decided to take the approach where we would, at their request too, they preferred this, to have everybody in the same room, everyone talking the same language, everybody understanding the deal and how it's going to work. And this particular group of landowners, very sophisticated farmers, very well educated, just great people. And we gave them that respect, and we exercised patience in negotiating the lease, because the lease that we presented to them initially was very different than the lease we ended up settling on at the end of the day. And it took several months to do this. And Dan and I started out the negotiations, and then in order to speed things up, Dan came down. So because just to make it easier, we could make decisions right then and there on the spot. Dan was right there. It was great. I mean, oftentimes we'd excuse ourselves and go out to my truck, call our lawyer, discuss the terms, agree on it, and go back into the room. It was like one of these types of scenarios, which worked. It worked. And I give a lot of credit to the landowners, because they really were focused on the things that mattered, and things like reclamation, things like, you know, compensation and, you know, how that works. And, you know, keep in mind too, that solar, negotiating solar or interest in land for solar in Alberta is relatively new. So everybody is learning along the way here, including us. And by the end of the negotiations, by the time they signed the agreements, the lease was very evolved. And I would say pretty equal as far as the, you know, the mutual benefits of the project for them and for us. So at the end of the day, we agreed to terms that we could all live with. And we entered into the option term, and that at that point we hand the project or the land access over to our development team, who again, an incredible team we have here at Greengate. We're able to jump right in, start our environmental assessments and bird studies and all the standard things that we do in these types of project developments initially. So, and they take a lot of time. Yeah. And then during that, you know, over the course of the 5 years, I would maintain a relationship with landowners, very, very close to all of them. You know, we developed a friendship almost over the course of the, you know, to get to this point. And again, that's very important. And I always look at this access is my job is to plow the road open for our development team. And then my job is to keep it open, because at any time, anything can go sideways in our business, including, you know, during development, because don't forget, we haven't even got to the permitting stage yet. So, and then the permitting stage is when, you know, our development team has compiled all the information, completed the application, submitted it to the AUC, then it goes out to public for their, you know, their approval, basically. And we really are hearing adverse at Greengate. We don't want to go to hearings, although there's almost all of these projects, all these renewable energy projects in Alberta go to hearings with the AUC these days, but we still don't like it and we don't want to do that. So we really work hard on keeping that road open, keeping those relationships strong with the landowners out to the, you know, the boundaries, the AUC PIP boundaries. Really try to keep everybody informed, whether they're part of the project, the participating landowners, or they're outside of the project area. So my job is to make sure that everybody is informed, because landowners and farmers, they don't like surprises. They like to be, they don't want to be the last one to know the information or to hear it from somebody else. They really like to hear it directly. And that's my job. So that's really hard work. I mean, to keep that level of communication open constantly over the course of the development prior to permitting is very challenging indeed.
How many acres, how big of a footprint is this project?
It's on 3,680 acres, so 23 quarter sections. And we actually have 29 quarter sections, you know, under option, under lease. However, during the optimization and design phase of our project, we decided to go with a bifacial panel there. So we're able to collect energy from the front of the panel and behind the panel as it reflects off the ground in the snow. And so that made the project more efficient. So we're able to reduce the overall footprint of the from 29 quarter sections to 23 quarter sections.
Good way to make use of our weather.
It sure is.
Yeah. It sure is. Okay, so how many landowners that were directly affected?
Oh, there's about 7 or 8 families there. You know, 13 landowners, but about 7 or 8 families in that whole area.
Yeah. Well, and correct me if I misunderstood this. My understanding is that you took a different approach because of the type of project, and I think also because you understood what kind of potential dynamics you'd be dealing with here. And that different approach being not so much one-on-one discussions, but bringing everybody together. I guess, correct me if I misunderstood that, but then take us into that. Like, how is your approach different, I guess, is what I'm asking, from other projects that you've worked on?
Again, you know, from the initial approach, you know, you have to listen to what the landowners are saying too and pick up those cues and those intuition, if you will. And they made it pretty clear from the beginning that they, you know, they've dealt with oil and gas companies. They just don't want anybody getting a better deal. So then, you know, they don't want one owner to get a better deal than the other. So, you know, it was really at their suggestion that we get together to do this. So I wasn't going to fight that. I thought that was the path of least resistance. It was against what I normally would do, which is fine. I would just have to get in the room and see how it unfolded. And that's simply the approach we took. And like I said, in other projects and wind project, wind's a little different. You know, it's less impact on, you know, there's less land used, and you can sort of just go around and talk to everybody individually, because it's a much bigger area also. Like the Black Spring Ridge Wind Project is on 64 sections of land. Getting everybody in a room, we'd have to rent a hall to do that. So, right. And again, it would just intuitively having, I've been in rooms with groups of landowners, and I can't think of one time where, except for this instance, where it didn't turn into a, you know, town hall meeting that went wrong. And I just try to avoid that. But in this case, this approach worked. Again, it was more organic. They're the ones that suggested it. I went with it, and you know, and it was tough. It was tough. There were lots of moments in there where, you know, it got pretty heated. I would say, and not in a respectful way, but passionate. We'll say passionate. But you know, again, during those, you know, times of those kind of tight, tough discussions, our job was just to be patient and listen and understand fully and make accommodation where we could.
One of the things that I want to point out here, so that our listeners understand this, there, the fact that you have no recourse when you're developing, when you want to develop a renewable energy project and you require land to do so, there is no recourse, meaning you can't fall back on a regulatory body to grant you permission to be on that land and then work out the terms later. There's no right of entry. And that's an important distinction that I think our listeners need to know. And so you are really there to, you know, to find a path forward. And if you can't, there is no fallback.
It's this is a completely optional, it's a business decision that landlords have to make. We do not have any recourse, like you said, as far as expropriation or any kind of regulatory governance that forces the issue here. So we really have to take this approach, this approach of upfront, honest, business opportunity, and really take that, present it that way. And, you know, there's been lots of discussions in the last couple of years about, with landowners and surface rights advocates and farmers advocates in bringing regulation in which would, permit or regulate negotiations for renewable energy projects only by a land agent. And, you know, I've done many talks on this topic, and I'm not shy about my position on this. And that is, in no disrespect to land agents and land men, but I don't think that's the right way to go. I don't think their training as a land agent has anything to do with land negotiations for an optional taking of land or use of land for renewable energy projects. And that's something I feel very strongly about. I think this takes a whole different set of skills, whether they're life skills or they're taught skills or skills that they've learned somehow through education. But land negotiation is not something that you can force. You know, it's having this approach of with landowners, putting them at ease when you approach them right at the beginning to say, this is completely optional. I'm not a land man. I'm not a land agent. This is renewables is different. And, you know, taking that approach and putting them into use right away, I think has always been a step that I've taken right from the very beginning. Because again, I mentioned earlier that I'm often the first person that farmers talk to about this, about renewable energy, about wind and solar, and they know nothing about it. So their immediate thought is, I'm going to take their land if I say no, which is not the case. So I make sure that right up front that I disarm them that way and let them know, you know, very early in the conversation that they don't even have to talk to me if they don't want to. I mean, this is an optional situation, but I, you know, and some of them say no, and that's fine. And again, understanding a firm no, meaning don't call me again. If you come here again, I'm going to pull out my Smith and Wesson. Mm-hmm. That's fine. All right. Then we have to respect that and understand that that's a serious, they don't want anything to do with it. But then there's some people who say no, but I've had people who said no, who come back to me a month or two later after their neighbors have all signed up and now they're more interested in learning about it because they don't want to be left out. So there's those kind of no's also. But either way, I mean, I think disarming them by distinguishing between, you know, regulation and non-regulation as far as what we can do as a land negotiator in this instance is very important to gaining their trust and understanding of the overall opportunity.
That's an important message for institutions like Olds College, I think, to ensure that they're covering the basis on this stuff. What I'm curious about is, what do you think were the key drivers that caused this group of landowners to be interested in carrying on with the conversation?
At Travers?
Yes.
Well, in all cases here, these farms are all generational, third, fourth generation farmers on the same land. So they had a deep concern about, you know, the land use and access to the land and exactly how it's going to be done, weed control, because they're also concerned about, they also know that once you disturb soil, weeds grow and they have neighbors and they don't want these weeds to spread to their neighbors and have to deal with those. So it's a deep respect for the land that caused them to want to, you know, they're also very good business people. So they want to make sure that they're getting the best deal, but also I think equally to that, if not more, was their deep respect for their own land and the condition of their land during the life of this project.
Do you think that there's a clean energy component that might drive certain landowners to say yes to a project like this?
I don't know. I don't think so. I don't think any of them felt very strongly either way about renewable energy, you know, as an option. They're farmers and they're more concerned about getting enough rain and enough sun, you know. So no, I don't think so.
Yeah. I'm often curious about that. And that's been our experience too, when other projects we've worked on across Canada and the US, where it's not necessarily, you know, one way or the other. Mm-hmm. And I think the fact of the matter remains that there's going to be resistance no matter what the development is. And that's been our experience. We run across situations where we have just as much resistance against the development when it's clean energy versus oil and gas, as an example. Okay, 465 megawatts of power, is that the output of this solar farm?
That is correct. Yeah, that's an enormous amount of clean energy, enough energy to power over, you know, 200,000 homes a year. Yeah, and you know, this project, you know, is we partnered with Copenhagen Infrastructure Partners on this. They CIP, they're out of Denmark. So they're the primary on the project as far as ownership, and GreenGate has retained a financial interest in the project and some services and contracts and agreements with respect primarily to stakeholder relations for the life of the project. So we're still very, very involved in the project. You know, more recently, you've probably heard that CIP secured a virtual power purchase agreement with Amazon for 400 megawatts of that project. So that's an enormous offtake agreement and, you know, very important to project financing is to have these contracts, because the Alberta market is like any is unlike any other market in Canada. It's the only deregulated energy market. So we're a merchant market. So power is priced hour to hour based on supply and demand. So there's no fixed. Yeah. So the way the VPPA works is, you know, a company like Amazon would approach a renewable project or vice versa to buy the power. And it's because it's virtual, we still sell the power into the grid, but we're guaranteed a price by the offtaker. So Amazon would agree to a price. We would agree to a price. It's, let's just say it's $50 a megawatt hour for just for example. So the way that works is, because it's a spot market price and, you know, it's up and down hour to hour, on a monthly basis, we calculate that average price, that merchant price. And if it comes in at $60, then we pay $10 to Amazon. If the average price comes in at $40, they pay us that X. So we're guaranteed that $50 no matter what. And that's calculated monthly. And it's basically a contract for differences. The listeners would who understand this would recognize that term. So that's basically what these VPPAs are.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's an interesting distinction. The virtual, for our listeners, and I'll make sure I get this right, virtual power purchase agreement.
So they don't have to be directly connected to the project because it's virtual. It's just a virtual contract.
Right. And we're seeing that more and more. Companies like Amazon, these big global entities that are coming out with their own clean energy goals. The sense I have is this virtual power purchase agreement gives them the ability to meet some of those targets. Can you tell us more about like what you're seeing in that regard?
Well, again, Alberta is just is a unique opportunity for off-takers because of our deregulated market. But this is a market that is becoming, it's not even emerging, it's well-established, and it's happening more and more each day. And as companies, you know, are redefining their own, you know, their own goals as far as their, how clean they are. And electricity is a major component of that. And luckily, they have the ability to get these VPPAs with any project anywhere. So we feel that this is a strong component to our business model, and it works both ways. It's a win-win for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very innovative. Tell us what's on the horizon for GreenGate Power. What's next?
Well, we have several, you know, wind and solar projects, late stage development. We just broke ground. You know, we have a partner on our wind projects, Potentia Renewables out of Toronto. And, you know, our Sterling Wind project is stated to break ground next year. We just broke ground on the Wheatland Wind project, 120 megawatt wind project out near Drumheller just a couple of weeks ago. And we have Paint Earth Wind project up near Castor and Paint Earth, Castor and Halkirk in Paint Earth County. And then we have a whole portfolio of solar projects at various stages of development. We are aggressively advancing those projects. We are actively looking for contracts with potential off-takers on those projects. And, you know, our team is hard at work getting these things to the stage where we can submit our applications to get permitted with the province. And so we are just guns fully loaded, and we're out there, making history.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say so. You manage a lot of relationships. I really appreciate your point, the point you made about, getting the door open, getting the road open, but then keeping it open. And I think in that interview Dan gave with BNN, he mentioned something about Greengate staying involved. And one of the things I heard him say was to continue to manage the relationships on the ground. And I think that's an important piece of this puzzle. When I hear you talk about all the other projects that you're involved in, I automatically think, wow, think of all the relationships that you're managing, Dan. Like, how many relationships are you managing? Sounds like a lot of balls in the air.
It is very challenging. Like I said, it does require a lot of patience, a lot of understanding and intuition with people. And, I think Dan would, if you were talking to Dan about, the skills and why we've been successful with our, on the stakeholder side, it is because, of the strong intuition about people and the ability to balance many, many, many relationships, not just the landowners, but it's the county representatives. And, oftentimes I've had several meetings with the county before we go to the county with our development team to get our development permit with the county. So, there's First Nations relationships. It's a very, very important part of our business also. The landowners, the counties, and, just any stakeholder who has an interest in the project or wants to talk about the project, our phone line, we always answer our phone. We talk to anybody and everybody. We just try to stay consistent and transparent, because at the end of the day, we need them to trust us. And the only way to do that is to tell the same story every single time. There's nobody's getting a better deal than anybody else, and really earn their respect and trust. It's critical to the success of our project. And not just I'm talking about the people outside the project too. So, mm-hmm. It is a lot, but there's a lot at stake too. I mean, we are all working hard. Everybody is working hard. Our development team is busting it. They've got their thing to do. And my job is to make sure that nobody gets in the way of it. So, it's at times it's long hours. It's driving all over the place. It's high risk, but very high reward for us. Mm-hmm.
There are big shoes to fill. And, if you think of the effect of the work you do, is that your company has a good rapport in the communities. I think they have a good reputation even outside of those communities. And I'd say, you're the cause of that effect, Dan. So what advice would you give? I there was a hint of advice that you just gave, but let's be clear for our listeners. What advice would you give to a project developer that is considering any kind of development that's going to impact a community?
Mm-hmm. Well, there's lots of examples out there of very poor approaches from developers and renewable energy approaching landowners. There's lots of examples of what can go wrong when when you're pushing yourself around with them, you're not respecting them. You think for some reason that this is going to get built no matter what, and they're just going to take whatever deal it's a personality thing. Telling the same story, same terms, conditions, being transparent, being honest, having a lot of patience and intuition is critical to success. I mean, nothing happens. Nobody has a job in renewable energy companies, developers, unless you get the land first. So, it's a foundational asset that it proves enormously valuable to the success of the company. And having patience, and then that's the front end. But then as you're in there, you have to respect, you have to show respect, you have to really establish a relationship with these people in order for them to trust you. And then once you have that, maintain that, and deal with the ups and downs as it comes along. Because it doesn't matter what kind of relationship you have with the landowner during the length of the time, from the time we first approach, to the time we, you know, break ground, there's ups and downs. It's not just because, you know, they're friendly, everybody's great, doesn't mean there's going to be tough questions and tough conversations. So, you know, you have to be well informed. That's why, you know, I'm not an engineer, I'm not a finance guy, but I sit in on those meetings. So I gather that information so that I have information to give that's accurate and, you know, as much as I can tell them anyways. So it's super important to be informed with factual information, you know, and that just leads to the overall, you know, relationship building and trust building that is required. I mean, it's fundamental to the success of any development project.
Dan, what do you think the future holds in Alberta with respect to energy development, new types of energy? And what do you think our role is going to look like as access professionals in that regard?
Well, I think, you know, we're still very young in the industry here in Alberta, really. I mean, wind is only 11% of the energy electricity mix in Alberta, and solar is just about 1%. So there's huge upside still. I mean, we have other emerging markets. Hydrogen is coming in, you know, full speed. And I would mention with respect to hydrogen and emerging sort of efforts out there to transition, is there's an organization called Transition Accelerators. It's led by a really good friend of mine, Dan Wicklund, CEO of Transition Accelerators, but they're really leading the way in hydrogen development and forming that market and bringing awareness to that in Alberta. But I think, you know, from our perspective, as long as we continue to have support, policy support, supporting innovation, and the emergence also of other technologies like storage. Storage is becoming a major part of our portfolio. You know, as long as these things continue to develop, there's always going to be opportunity for guys like us to get in with developers and advance these projects by initially having the opportunity to gain access to develop these projects. So as long as these things are continuing to emerge and improve, there's always going to be the opportunity for us to do what we do.
Okay, Dan. Well, this has been great. I think it's remarkable the work you do. And I think it's remarkable how Greengate's blazing trail here on these big projects. And I'm excited to see what comes next. Where can people reach you? If people want to reach out to you to have a chat, is there a way they can do that?
Sure. I mean, anybody can connect with me on LinkedIn, or they can go to our company website, and our contact information is there also. They can drop me an email. But yeah, I'd be happy to speak with any of the listeners that are interested in learning more about this. And if I can help in any way, I'm happy to do so.
Great. Well, we'll make sure we include some contact information in the show notes page. And thank you, Dan. Thanks for coming on the show. And I look forward to staying in touch.
Thanks a lot, Chad. Pleasure.